The story of Elena Munkova. When you spend your adult life as a writer, as Elena Munkova did, you know how to tell a story. And here's a woman who is brutally honest about her childhood, about her life afterwards, and how she sees the world today. Elena Munkova was 80 years old when Zhuzhana Struhova interviewed her in 2006. You can find a link to her biography, which is around 40 pages, in the show notes. This edited version was read for us by Shelley Blonde in London.
My name is Elena Munkova, and I was born in Prague in 1926. And besides the Terezin ghetto, I've never lived anywhere else. My childhood is interwoven with the neighbourhood of Letna, the district where I grew up. I was absolutely rooted to that sidewalk. You know the way they say a person has roots to his land? Here it was the sidewalk. And the loss of that place where you grew up? It can't be renewed. Oh, a person pretends a bit, but it's gone. You see, childhood forms a person, whether he wants it or not. And it also deforms. I remember our apartment house. They recently made it into a bank, and now it's a KFC. From bad to worse. Back then, my father's dental practice and our flat took up the ground floor. But my first memories are awful. I was six and my mother was dying of cancer. Grandma came to see her and mother was crying, saying, "What will become of my children? What will become of my children?" They didn't know I was listening. But to hear that so young, suddenly the ground opens up in front of you and you fall in. After that, my father remarried, and as hard as it is to believe, his second wife died of cancer when I was just 11. I was 13 when the Germans invaded in 1939, and I have very sharp memories, mostly because my brother and I weren't raised with any sort of Jewish identity at all. Besides that, I was going through puberty. Suddenly this blow from nowhere, that I didn't belong in the society that I lived in. They threw us out of school. I heard that we had to wear a big J for Jude, that we can walk only in certain streets, and on streetcars, we had to ride in the back. Do you know that even today, when I get on a streetcar, I still go to the front? As a Jewish family, we had food coupons with a big J. We had smaller rations and could shop only during certain hours. Some shopkeepers would bring my father groceries. I heard it more than once, "But doctor, you're a Jew?" Of all the prohibitions, the thing that bothered me most was that we couldn't go to school. I didn't care so much about the schoolwork. It's the fact that you were literally deleted from the only society you cared about. To make it worse, you couldn't go to the movies or do just about anything else. It was also back then that my big complex began, because I said to myself, I don't belong among the Jews. I simply don't belong anywhere. I just wanted to be like other people, and I even yelled at my father as if my identity was his fault. But father never could get angry with me. About his second wife. Anna Mandova was Catholic, a true angel. By marrying a Jew, she was going to pay quite a price. And father began getting more and more depressed. He even engrossed himself in the Bible. He read both the Old and the New Testament. It didn't matter which one. In March 1938, a cousin came to us from Vienna after the Germans took it. He was on his way to France and, I think, England. He told us about what was happening in Vienna And when he left, my father said, "That man must be crazy. He needs to go to a mental institution." Poor father. He didn't know we were the ones heading for the institution. In 1942, my brother got a summons to the transport to Terezin. Alone, of course, because our father was protected by his marriage to a non-Jew. But my brother just left a letter that he'd committed suicide. He managed to get away. We lived with a deep sense of fear, of doom. It lasted up to December 1942, when I was summoned to a transport to Terezin. My father completely collapsed, because there was nothing he could do to protect me. For him, I was his little girl. He blamed himself for everything. Later, I found that someone informed on him and his wife. They were both arrested in the fall of 1943. He ended up in Auschwitz and perished there. My stepmother, who wasn't even Jewish, went through hell and survived Ravensbrück. She returned at the end of June 1945. When I got to Terezin, suddenly I wasn't alone anymore. I was put in the children's home, a real society that was, in its own way, full of life. I also experienced love in Terezin. And not just once. I think that I fell in love at least 5 times. I never counted the times, and I also soon got over it. Terezin gave me an amazing education. First of all, many of the people sent to Terezin were professors and artists, and all of them truly tried to convey what they knew. I'm sure I would never have met such impressive people if I hadn't been locked up in that ghetto with them. But there was more to it than that. At Terezin, you experienced everything with great intensity because you just didn't know how much longer you were going to be alive. You certainly didn't have the feeling that time was just uselessly running between your fingers. And the intensity we felt was heightened by the fact you were always, always hungry. You never weren't hungry. So between the hunger, the not knowing who was being put on transports to the east, all that meant I was living with an intensity I'd never felt before, or after. The leadership of the ghetto understood this. They tried to do everything they could for us, even though most of them ended up murdered. They simply knew that the children, the teenagers, had the best chance of surviving this hell. In the end, it wasn't like that for many of us, but this was the hope they clung to. The question, why did I survive and not someone else? This feeling of guilt. We've all got it to this day. You just don't know what those children who were deported would have become. That weighs on you. And in the end, I was not deported to Auschwitz. I stayed in Terezin. We were terribly looking forward to returning home in May 1945, but of course there was no place to return to. I didn't know what to do, how to live, why at all, and mainly, there was no one to turn to for advice. A friend of my father's came to me, and he and his daughter absolutely made me go to school. He even gave me money to help out. I began attending university in the spring of 1946. I picked the Faculty of Journalism at the University of Political and Social Sciences. I finished in the winter of 1949, and in 1950, I started working in feature films at Barrandov Film Studios. I'd only been there for about a year and a half when they threw me out for being unreliable, because I was Jewish. The 1950s were awful. The Slansky trials, all those people tried and hung because they were Jews. And then I also had big problems because my brother had gone abroad. I was brought in for questioning several times, and I became so depressed, so anxious. But my conflicts were never caused by my own behaviour. I had done nothing wrong. Yet I definitely didn't want to emigrate. One of the reasons is that nowhere is there as beautiful a city as Prague. So dramatic. So lovely. And I wasn't able to imagine not using Czech, my language. And I'd die without that Czech countryside, those verdant hills, the forests, the streams. I spent my adult life working in films, writing scripts, mostly. Sometimes I was fired, surely, for being a Jew. Other times they left me alone. And I loved what I did. I even stayed on after my retirement. My first husband was an architect, but we divorced. We had no children. I then married a Jewish man, Jiri Monk. Jiri had also been in Terezin, and we had a daughter in 1965. When communism fell in 1989, we were all so happy, and we were so naive. Well, people, I suppose, don't really change. When I think about my life, I realise that I'm a person of the 20th century, not the 21st, and I can't erase that from myself. Our century marked us. I remember how I used to laugh at my grandfather when he talked about the Austro-Hungarian monarchy and painted such a picture. We thought he was making it up. I'm not laughing any longer. Now that I'm older, more and more questions pile up around me, and I rarely have the answers. The most important question is, how does one come to terms with what we went through? What do those of us who survived have in common? I think that the majority of us are just more tolerant than others. At least those among us here in Prague, the ones I meet with. I can say that if I were to summarise what my stay in the concentration camp took from me, I would have to say it took my past. A past I could never get back. I realised this recently when an Austrian journalist came to interview me. He came several times and he kept asking me about how I came to terms with the past. And that's when I realised, and I told him. No, I haven't come to terms with the past. And I never will.